Hey Kayla, I am not turning my camera on tonight. No camera. I did not budget my time wisely, and I have my hair in a head wrap from my shower. Feeling rough. You can turn your camera on though. Hi Sarah. There you are. You guys have to be on camera, but I look terrible tonight. I'm freezing. Oh, goodness. Hi. Kayla, give us an update.
Ainsley got her tongue tie done last Thursday. That's why I hopped off so abruptly on postpartum because she did really fine with the procedure, but around 8 o'clock, all hell broke loose and
Oh
she
no.
was screaming bloody murder. It was awful. I cried because of how she was crying.
I'm sure.
And we had it, we got the pediatrician on the phone to find out when, how often we could give her Tylenol. And I ended up getting, like, we, I got down skin to skin to regulate her breathing and her temp because of how much she was crying. We put her in a warm bed. I mean, we did everything we could until, like, the Tylenol kicked in. And then, like, finally she was able to fall asleep, but that wasn't till like 11 p.m. But yeah,
Have to do
other
it
than
now.
that, she's good. She doesn't love, so we have to do these little stretches where we have to push her tongue towards the roof of her mouth a little bit and then like sweep underneath to make sure like while it's healing it doesn't like refuse. So she doesn't love those, but she doesn't like scream bloody murder either. So we have a follow-up this week just to see how it's healing, but it's been good. I've already noticed a little bit of a difference when she's eating. She's not like dribbling a lot. So that's good. And then the napping, we still haven't figured out the napping.
Well, you know what's so interesting is that I did a podcast recording today, and it was with a chiropractor who specializes in pregnancy, postpartum, and baby. And she specifically
Hey, it's
specializes.
18.
Oops, let me mute her.
19.
She specifically specializes in doing care after having the correction for tongue tie or lip tie. And she was talking about going to see a chiropractor and how she works with very hand in hand with other specialties to correct. So I'm wondering if that might be an option you might want to look into.
Yeah, so last week Cassie had mentioned it as well as I think Ekta had mentioned it as well. She had sent me a message. And I recently started seeing a chiropractor because funny enough, I know last week Ekta was talking about the inflammation her body's been having with the breastfeeding and the pain that she's been having. I've had the worst, like, they did blood work. I've had my blood work showed high markers of inflammation. And I'm not breastfeeding. So it's been rough for me in terms of the physical pain. But I started seeing a chiro thinking it was something mechanical. And I asked them if they saw babies, and they do. So I'm actually going to take her tomorrow
Oh, nice.
with me to my appointment. And I'm going to see if, a few sessions of that will help because I've noticed she also does a lot. I mean, she's still really young and she doesn't have a ton of neck control still, but she's always very tight like this with her neck. And sometimes when she's feeding, she's arching her back a lot. And again, I know that's all can be corrected with the chiro, but Cassie had mentioned that that could also help with her daytime sleep because her nighttime sleep's fine. It's just the daytime sleep. Like I got trapped today with both naps that were 2 hour long a piece. So like on the one hand, she napped and I was really happy,
But on the other hand, I was,
you know, trapped under my sleeping baby for 2 hours at a time.
Yeah, that is something else.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully you're going to have some end in sight as she gets some of these things worked out. So hopefully that'll give you a little more ability to do things during the day.
Yeah, I know. I know. Like, it's on the one hand, like, I love it. But on the other hand, it's like, I want to shower and eat lunch and help with the laundry and stuff like that. So.
It's so hard for me to be like compassionate with you right now, because I would give anything to just sit with one of my children back as a newborn and not move for 2 hours. So
yeah, my best friend, she's like, I would give anything. None of my babies sleep with me anymore. She has an 11, a six, an 11, a 7, and a 5-year-old. And she's like, I would give anything for them to sleep with me still. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. Well, I say that coming off of, I was just having a little movie time with Grayson, and he was getting a little moody about something. He just turned 8 yesterday. And I was like, come give me a hug. He's like, I'm not feeling that right now. I was like, I'm crushed. I'm literally crushed. For those of you guys who weren't on when I started, I am not showing myself right now because I mismanaged my time a bit. And I decided I'm going to go ahead and shower and then blow dry my hair and like get on here. And then I mismanaged sort of, because Grayson asked me to watch a movie and that seemed more appealing than blow drying my hair. So I have one of those like little towel head wrap things on, and there is just no way my camera is coming on today. Anyway, and I'm freezing. Oh, I'm so freezing, like cold in my bones, freezing. Yeah, so I feel you. I wish I lived closer to all of you guys. I just put on a Soli wrap, come sit and hold your babies. You guys could do whatever. It's just such a sweet thing, but I remember being in the throw of it. And it's like, it's so hard, because I feel like, I think I was talking to you guys maybe on the postpartum one, I don't remember, but it's so hard when you're in the trenches of whatever the trenches are. It's hard to really sit back and like take it all in and be grateful for it when you have real life going on and you have to do this and you have to do that and this has to get done. So it's easy for me to say like, oh yeah, I wish that I could be back at that stage. But I also vaguely remember that it was difficult at the time, at times, you know. But especially with Grayson having reflux and that milk allergy, like I never could lay that kid down. I swear it was nonstop. But he is no longer being warned. So we got past that stage. All right, let me check in with Sarah. How are you? 32 weeks. It's killing me.
Well, I messaged you yesterday. We ended up going to triage. I had this like really strange contraction pattern that I never had it even during labor with my first. And I never felt that wave sensation during my first delivery or labor. And it was so weird. And I was like, I have always had Braxton Hicks like pretty much 20, all the time during my pregnancies, but they, you know, they'll only happen when I'm walking. As soon as I sit down, they stop. They don't feel like a wave. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, what is going on? And it happened for about 3 hours. And so I messaged or I paged my midwife and just was like, I just want a little guidance here. I don't want to have like a 32 week baby.
Yeah, of course.
And so after, I think I called her after like 2 hours of it happening. And then she said to drink like a liter of water and take it easy and see if it stopped. And so I did that, and it still, you know, I was having at least 6 or 7 of them an hour. And so,
yeah, that's too much.
Yeah, it was crazy. They weren't painful, but none of my Braxton Hicks or like labor contractions were ever painful. So I didn't really consider that being like an issue or like
Well, at 32 weeks, pain really isn't a deciding factor for us to tell you to
Okay.
come in. Usually we will say, like if you're having more than 6 in an hour, then we probably want to see you.
Yeah, and it then that happened for about 3 hours. So it was good that we went
Yeah.
in, but it and nothing, I mean everything was fine. I guess I'm just having different kind of contractions. I don't know. But
Yeah.
I was not dilated. I was long and closed, and the only kind of bad part of the whole experience was I had a very rough vaginal exam, and it was
I'm
kind of
really surprised they
traumatizing.
did a vaginal exam at 32 weeks. I would have thought that they would have done a speculum and just looked at your
Yeah.
cervix.
Well, and that's the thing is, so it was right at shift change, and the first nurse that came in said, "Oh, you'll have the spec exam because
Yeah.
you're 32 weeks." And I was like, "Oh, okay, so that's what I was preparing for." And then this midwife or doctor, I don't know who she was, came in and pretty much just shoved her fingers up my
Yeah.
vagina, and I
That's
was
like entirely inappropriate because that in itself, if you were in preterm labor, could stimulate more
right.
labor. So I don't like that.
It was awful. I was pretty much having like a trauma response. I don't know. I was just like hyperventilating. I was crying. I felt so violated. I told my so this at this point, a different nurse had come on. I told her like I felt like I did not consent to that, and I thought that we were going to do a speculum, and I don't know. It was awful, and I was like, I don't want
And
to have a baby here.
I'm interested in her response to that.
The midwife or whoever it was, I don't know who she was. Oh, sorry. She well, so when I got a hold of so my midwife that I'd been in contact with earlier, she ended up calling me to because I think the nurse alerted her that I was very upset. And so they're like, "Oh, well, do you just want us to put something in your chart about it?" And so, but then the midwife came in later and was like, "Well, I need to see if you're in labor or not." So that's why I had to do a check and not with a speculum. So I don't.
So I don't know if can I'm really like, the majority of my career has been high risk, working at some of like the top high risk facilities, and I have never that's just so out of norm for a preterm labor check. It's always a
Yeah.
speculum exam. Like I feel like there was some, I'm like, so I know it's different in Canada, but is the midwife
I'm
your
in
labor?
Michigan.
Oh, you're in Michigan. Why do I always
Yeah.
think this?
I don't
Midwife.
know. I mean, I'm close to Canada.
So it was a labor nurse. So that makes it easier for me. Absolutely cannot imagine that your provider's order was anything but having a midwife or a doctor do a spec exam.
Yeah, and that's what the nurse, the first nurse said.
I think that other nurse went rogue. I think that she made a mistake is my opinion. And when you see your doctor, I would clarify, like say, what is the norm for a 32-week pregnant person for a preterm labor check? Is it normal to do a vaginal exam? And it was a very aggressive vaginal exam. And I would say, correct me if I'm wrong, but if I were in preterm labor, couldn't that make it worse?
Worse. It
I mean,
was
I know
so
I'm
bad.
right. That's exactly what it would do. But I'm really shocked because I mean, I can't, the majority of the places that I've worked out, that would have been a big, like, they
What do
would
I
have to
do?
write an
Yeah.
incident report on that. I mean, at this point, it hasn't caused you harm. But
Right.
the thing is that something needs to be done if that wasn't ordered. If
Right.
the doctor ordered it, that's on the doctor.
Okay.
But if the nurse did it and it wasn't the order, and I won't lie, there's been times when we're really busy and I know we have a labor check and I don't pay attention to how many weeks, but when I go in, I'm like, okay, this is not a full term, or, and I'll go back and look at the order, like, oh, okay, this is not a full term, you know, like, but you know what
I'm
saying?
She knew I was 32. She said that the other nurse, the one that said it would be a spec exam, was wrong.
Yeah, that's weird. I don't know.
But again,
it would have to be the order. Like, okay. I would ask the doctor, what was ordered? Is it normal that you would do that? And then, okay, let's say it was ordered. Okay, then she's not going rogue. But at that point, I would say, like, she didn't inform me what she was doing. I had been told that it was going to be a speculum exam. That's what I was mentally prepared for. And then she was really aggressive, which a vaginal exam at 32 weeks is not going to be easy, because you really, what I would refer to as, have to dig for the cervix, because the way our bodies work is that the cervix is pointed backwards at that point for protection, you know?
Right.
But again, the few times I've seen a provider, not a nurse, do a preterm vaginal exam, they're doing it so gingerly, you know, because right. they don't want to stimulate anything.
It was awful. Know. Could I want to do an incident report. I just don't even know where to start.
I would call up to labor and delivery and ask to speak to the nurse manager.
Okay.
And tell her that you want to write a report because you don't want that to happen to anyone else. You know, but I would wait until you talk to your provider, so that go ahead and write down the date, and you know her name.
The only thing I'm worried about is that they asked if I had like sexual trauma history. And I do. And so I don't know if they like flagged me as like being
okay. All right, that's bullshit, because, I mean...
They flagged my chart, is what they told me.
Well, that's fine. That's fine.
But they won't, use that against me?
You know what? If they do, then we're talking about a bigger problem, because your chart should be flagged with that for their sensitivity from here on out, not to mark you as a problem child. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't matter if you have sexual abuse trauma or not. When someone's going to stick their fingers inside of your vagina, they should ask. There should be informed consent for that. And on top of it, you weren't an inpatient. You were a triage patient. So I bet you hadn't signed any consent forms. Right. So... you know, because there is some hospitals use a general consent of care form that covers, they'll write out vaginal exam, this, that, and the other. But either way, you guys, if you've signed a consent form for anything, when someone comes to perform care, they should still ask your permission, period.
Right.
You know, so I know a lot of times when we know that we need to let someone know what's happened, we have all of this like guilt and people pleaser like feelings. And I'm sure you're like, well, what if then they treat me like garbage when I go in? You know, like, no, I would say that the majority of the labor nurses are going to be sensitive to that. And if not, you're gonna speak up, because it's not just about you. Like, this is about all women out there. And a lot of women don't have the knowledge you have to be able to say, you know what? This is what I demand, and I have a right to this, you know? And I know you know my daughter's story. And, So just so you guys, what happens in happy hours stays in happy hours. Don't want to cry because I've been in court all day, but my daughter was sexually assaulted and by my ex and just told us a year ago. So we've been battling this sadistic monster. And so this is very near and dear to my heart because it's taken a year of therapy for me to be able to hug her without having to jump through hoops, you know? But you know what, Sarah? For a year, I've asked her permission to get close to her because that's what she needed. She needed to know that she has a right over her own body because that was taken from her. So if a nurse doesn't understand that, well, screw them. They need to learn it, you know? And right. And I'm very passionate about this topic. And at some point when we're done with this battle, I have learned so much. And at some point I will be using my platform to speak up for women who have been violated because it's an unbelievably high number. And I just did a podcast recording last week with a perinatal therapist, and the topic was on considering to get pregnant, being pregnant, and postpartum after sexual abuse. And it was probably the most, I mean, I think it's going to be my favorite podcast recording that I've done. It was just incredible, a really incredible one. So I'm sorry that that's happened to you. I actually was abused as a child as well, by a stranger. Thank God. I can't even imagine what my daughter's going through, but you know what? We're stronger and we'll get through it. Anyway, lots of tears. It's part of the other reason why I'm not on camera, you guys, because I was in court half the day, and family court is unbelievably disgusting. There's just, our country is, thank God, he does have supervised visits with Grayson, but the fact that they still let him see Grayson is mind-boggling. Anyhow, all right, so you never know which turn a happy hour will take.
Sorry. Did you have any other questions? Well, when I see a different midwife on Wednesday, do I ask her what the order was?
Yeah, I would ask her, just be like, hey, I'm really confused. The original nurse told me that it was going to be a speculum exam. I was prepared for a speculum exam and say, listen, I've experienced sexual abuse and trauma. And so part of my coping is being able to prepare myself and be ready for what's going to happen. And this is a big deal for me. And the next nurse comes in, doesn't even tell me what she's going to do. I'm expecting a speculum exam. I'm ready for that. And she performs a very aggressive vaginal exam, which was traumatizing to me. And say, like, I want to know, like, what was the order? And like, the other nurse told me they would do a speculum exam because I'm 32 weeks. Like, what was the correct avenue, you know?
My husband and daughter were with me, and my husband kept saying, or like afterwards, he was like, well, I thought she was going to get the speculum out because that's what the nurse said. And he felt so bad that he didn't like stop it.
Yeah. Well, I would say like you guys probably, I mean, it probably happens super fast too.
Oh yeah. It was like, what is going on? And then it was over. But I mean, I don't know.
Well, Did you yell out or say anything, or were you just in shock?
I was trying to do my breathing.
Yeah.
And then I just broke down as soon as she left the room. But I was just kind of like, I don't want to deliver a baby here. I don't want to be here. I don't want to have another check. I don't want anyone to touch me.
Yeah, I would tell your provider that. And the truth of the matter is, you don't technically have to have a cervical exam during labor. So, you know, there's that as well. I there's just so many things that need to change. I can't even tell you like some of the things that I've heard throughout my career and like just such callous comments and just a lack of education on staff. When we have, I can't think of the number now, but you guys, I want to say the number is in the high 60% of women have been sexually assaulted in one form or fashion. When we have 60% of our population having been sexually assaulted, then labor and delivery nurses should be adequately trained to handle that when our entire career is around something that can trigger that trauma in such an intense way. And I can tell you that, you know, myself having experienced sexual abuse as a child has given me a little more of an understanding, but not to the extent that I feel like I know now, having walked through this with my children. So I'm sure in my career, I probably said and did things that I had no idea was insensitive, and it really was a lack of training. And I think that really needs to change. Maybe that's how I'll use my platform. You know, because when I'm right now, if I spoke up at all on my platform, I would probably be in jail faster than this freaking monster, if he ever does. If he ever goes to jail, I don't know. But I guarantee that if I went online and said a word that implied what we're going through, they would have me in front of the judge in contempt of court and in jail.
Really?
So, oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. There's such a freaking, the family court system is a hot mess. Hot mess. Like it's, I can't. Like we've been, she reported in August of 2021. DCS got immediately involved. They did a forensic interview. They completely believe her. Since then, two more of my children, adults, mind you, have come forward. And he still has visitations with Grayson because his criminal attorney keeps putting the trial off. Yeah. And they are supervised, praise God. I would lose my lasting mind, but we ended up going back to court. I don't know. We went to court maybe in this summer, in August, because I found out just casually, my son says, oh yeah, and said the supervisor sleeps during the visits all the time.
Oh my
She's
gosh.
supposed to be watching my child. And so, of course, we filed a motion, and we have a new supervisor who I absolutely love. She became a supervisor. She has her PhD in psychology. She became one because her child was assaulted and she saw the need. And so I absolutely couldn't ask for a better supervisor. She's incredible. But anyway, I digress. Anyhow, it's been a day, but we are making progress. Lots of therapy, lots of therapy. Okay, so let us know how that goes because I think it's really important. Here's the thing. If things like that happen to you guys, no matter how big or small you feel the situation, which I 100% believe this is a big situation, but no matter how big or small it is, if you feel like you weren't honored, that your rights were infringed upon, even in a small way, if you just are like, well, I don't know if there's anything I can do, then there is nothing you can do because it's going to take us collectively speaking up and calling these things out for it to change because there's such a like power play inside, you know, the hospital, the staff, the providers, because no one speaks up and no one questions them. It's like such a God complex, you know, even for the nurses, like in some sense, there's just stuff we've always done. And like, I don't think a, I don't think that a lot of these nurses are doing it maliciously. I just think it's a lack of training, you know? And so right. if you start having patients say, hey, you know, that just made me feel like you were violating me. Like I felt violated by what you did. I guarantee the next patient's room she goes in, she's going to think twice, you know, and it's mm-hmm. going to take us being willing to speak up for that to change. There's so many things that have changed in the course of my career just because people like delayed cord clamping. Let me just tell you, it was a massive influx of a lot of what you would consider hippie mamas that changed that for everyone because it used to be this fringe of women who, you know, everybody looked at like, oh, they're so like tree hugger hippie. Well, they were right. And evidence-based care confirmed that they were right, but it took them being willing to speak up. Same with delayed bathing. In the beginning of my career, you guys, I saw doctors call DCS when a mom wouldn't bathe her baby. Like, what? Seriously? You know, like, what is that? Like, why do you care? Why does that matter? But it literally took people being willing. Like, can you imagine, like, imagine if you knew that the best choice for your baby, that if you spoke up and did it, that you were going to now have DCS involved. You'd be really hesitant to speak up. But thank God those women persevered and they changed it, you know, and they made it the norm. But it took a lot of really courageous women, because I don't know back then if I would have had the courage to do that either.
I feel nervous speaking up while I'm still pregnant.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you've got this, and you're right. That's the thing, you know, you're right. Like, I guess for, you know, like my big thing is we're gradually changing the birth culture right now. But really, by the time our daughters are having babies, there's going to be a result from right now. So when you're laying there and you're scared to speak up, think about your daughter and like, do you want this to happen to her? Hell no. And I feel like we have a lot more courage when we know we're doing something that's going to benefit our children too, you know?
I just can't believe she had to watch that happen to me.
Ugh. Yeah. And have you sat down and talked to her about it or walked through it with her? Or how old is she?
She's two.
Yeah, it probably freaked her out too. I'm sure she probably got scared.
I know, she kept coming over and like patting me and trying to like give me a tissue and.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a good teaching moment for sure. Because we're human. Mamas are human. So, well, thanks for sharing, Sarah. I know that takes a lot of courage. Like, my guess is that there are more mamas on tonight that have experienced some form of sexual abuse. And I think the other thing that this podcast recording we were talking about is that I think there's a lot of women that may not even be aware that some of what has happened to them has been violating and would fall into a sexual abuse category, you know, because we're like, even I don't like, this is how I know you must not have been. We had one of our happy hours and I had just watched this documentary. It's on Netflix, you guys. It's pretty powerful. And it's talking about these girls who some of them ended up committing suicide because they were sexually assaulted at parties once they like passed out or whatever. And these boys, the one in particular, the boys took her shirt off. They put stuff inside of her all while filming it and sharing it with other students. And what we as adult women think, oh my God, like people, like they, you know, like this was probably, they got in so much trouble. Well, on the flip side, what ended up happening, because they were sharing it among other students, boys and girls, all the students started calling the girl a slut and a whore, and look how stupid she was. And no one is mentioning that these boys like violated her. They were all focused on the fact that how dumb she was to get drunk and passed out, and she must be a slut. She is passed out. And in turn, she kills herself, because what ultimately, like, she couldn't even deal with the assault, because to a 14, 15 year old, their reputation and what people think and what they say about them, that's all that really matters to them. And so like it started this whole thing, and they go through these other girls, and it was just like, God dang, can I know, like, for myself, like I am sure there are things that happened to me in high school that had it been broadcasted on social media, even just minor being picked on or whatever, you know, that it, when you're that age, your reputation and like social whatever is so important. And it's just, yeah, like it's just, it's still going on that boys get away with things that are really horrific. Really horrific. That was an eye opening. I thought, man, I'm so glad I homeschooled my daughter. You know, but anyway, it's a whole nother happy hour. I said today when I was doing an interview, I say happy hour, but it's really like all the emotions hour. We go over everything. Anyway, let me check in with some of these other mamas. Mary, I just responded to your circle messages, but I knew you would be, I thought you'd be on here. Yeah. So I figured I would. Look at that nice round belly. I'm loving it.
Huge.
I love it.
I'm 36 weeks and 5 days. Let's see. I don't really have a lot of questions. My husband and I just finished our VBAC lab class this weekend. So really, we're just kind of wondering like what to do next. Like, I'm starting to get my hospital bag packed. We're looking into, we were looking on your website to see if there were any other classes that we could take. One that I'm interested in is that purposeful positioning.
Stop.
Oh, but other than
yeah, that,
I don't really have
Sorry, my dog is attacking me. Oh, stop. Hold on. Let me put her out. So she does this in the middle every time I let her stay in here. Hold on. What's going on? Is Dad out there? Nope. Sorry. Whoop. I don't know what she thinks she's getting, but she didn't get it. Yeah, so I highly recommend purposeful positioning, especially for my VBAC mamas, because movements and the different laboring positions, and we have like a download that you can take with you to the hospital where like, okay, they say this is going on, and then we show like it's has like almost like a tree. Okay, try this, try that, you know. You'll also have access to us as well in your labor bat signal. So yeah, and I can, I'll put in your DMs the student discount for okay. that as well. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry, I was in court all day, so it was a little hectic.
That's all right. I've also been, I've started taking my dates and the raspberry leaf tea.
Okay.
A question, what's it called? The mile circuit.
I think it's 37 weeks. If you go to the resources, I put a PDF download that I found online.
Yeah.
So that you guys can see. And I'm clicking on it now because I want to say it's 37 weeks that you start. Okay, of course it doesn't say that on there. Let me do a little research here for a second, but I'm pretty certain that 37 weeks. I put it in the notes.
Okay. So then I need to wait a few more days. I'm not quite there yet.
Right, you're not quite there. I mean, it probably wouldn't hurt for you to start it now and just do 10 minutes, 10 minutes, 10 minutes, because you eventually want to get to doing it for 30, 30, 30. So that, yeah, I would definitely try. I'm trying to find you that coupon too. I have it in here somewhere. Let's see. Sometimes, okay, here, I found it. Yeah, so I have a 40% off coupon that I'll send to you.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. And have you shared your previous birth story with everyone? Because I feel like I haven't heard it.
No, I haven't. I could do it on here if you wanted me to. I haven't. I
Yeah.
have to type it out.
I would love for you to do both if you're feeling up to it, because I think some of the other moms can tell you too. There's just something powerful about writing it out.
Yeah.
And when I ask you guys to write it out, I don't want you to write it out mindful of what people will think when they read it.
Yeah.
I want you to write it out exactly what you're feeling about the things, because what I found is that, and I see this with my calm labor students who end up having a cesarean or a something unexpected, is that they just naturally begin to cater it to the hearer and like what they think people want to hear and what they think people want them to feel about their birth, which is usually like, oh, you should just be grateful. Like, at least you and baby were healthy, and things like that. So I always say, when you write it out for us, write that out. Like, don't sugarcoat it. Don't edit out what you're really feeling. Like, just spill it out. Because if anybody can understand, it's my other VBAC mamas. So yeah, go ahead, share with us.
So with my first pregnancy and birth, so I went into my OBGYN. This was back in Indianapolis, Indiana. My husband and I currently are stationed at Fort Jackson in Columbia, South Carolina. So my first birth was back in our hometown in Indianapolis, Indiana. But I went in for my 41-week appointment, and not having the education that I have now after like taking the VBAC lab, I wasn't dilated, I wasn't effaced at all, and they recommended doing a induction with Pictocin, and I for at the time, like, should I push it out a couple days? I just wasn't sure. So I just kind of went along with it, which I regret that now. But babies were healthy and everything. There weren't any issues. So I probably could have ended up pushing it out a couple days if I wanted to. And then so we went in that night after my morning appointment with my OBGYN, and they started the Pictocin. And the weirdest thing about my labor and kind of like why I'm so nervous about going into labor on my own with this pregnancy is because I feel like I didn't really experience labor at all. I was in labor for 28 hours, but honestly, I remember sleeping through all of it. Like, time I woke up was when they came in to do a cervical check, or when they did the like Folly balloon. But I just remember being so tired that I pretty much slept through everything. It was weird. Like, I almost feel like I got something else other than just Pictocin in my IV. It was, I don't know, it was just weird. Anyway, so after the 28-hour mark, I was still only 5 centimeters dilated. And of course, the doctor kind of feel like, eh, you've tried really hard, but I think it's time that we, do a C-section. And so that's what happened. I forgot to mention that When they were inserting the Folly balloon, they broke my water, and I don't know if it was on accident or.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure it was.
But they ended up breaking my water. And so that obviously started that clock. So, and then I think the only thing that really gave me like birth trauma is when they were doing my cesarean. So once they already got baby out, I remember hearing him cry, and like they had him in like the corner of the room, and they were doing, you know, all of their vital checks and everything on baby. And I just remember him being like 45 minutes or whatever. I don't know how long exactly, because I was obviously on anesthesia and I was pretty out of it.
Right.
But I just remember like, where's my baby? Like, why have I not seen him yet? Like, where is he? Where is he? And not getting that response and not wondering like, okay, why is he not doing skin to skin? Like, you know, so I wasn't responses that I was wanting, like, where is my kid, you know? So I think that's the big thing for me that really gave me birth trauma, is that that golden hour was taken away from us. And then the other big thing about my birth, so actually 48 hours after my son was born, he stopped breathing. My husband and I and my son were doing a lap around the labor and delivery, like recovery area, and pacifier in, and I was at the nurse's station talking to one of the nurses for just a second, and then I turned my head and looked at my kiddo, and he was purple. So we had a couple incidents where that happened. So like it happened once when we were talking to the nurse's station, and then it happened once while I was trying to breastfeed him for the first time. Sorry, that's not true. Not during the first time I was trying to breastfeed, but it happened one of the times that I was trying to breastfeed. So it was like, maybe like our fourth or fifth time that we had tried. I don't know. My hours are kind of running together in my story, I guess.
That's okay.
But so it happened once while we were trying to breastfeed. And then my husband and I were both really, really tired. So they took baby to the nursery at one point during our hospital stay. And it happened three additional times while he was in the nursery. And so they woke us up in the middle of the night and basically gave us like 2 minutes to like see him and give him hugs and kisses. And then they rushed him off to the NICU. And then the next 16 days he had spent in the NICU. So that was.
Did they diagnose that? Because I know there's a transient, like apnea that can happen with newborns, especially if they don't get an effective clearance of their lungs, and which can happen with C-sections, but usually it's not to that extent.
Yeah, they, so they did a whole bunch of different tests, and all of those tests basically came back normal. And basically told us, is like, he just seems small and so fine. We don't know why this is happening. And, basically long story short, they labeled it central apnea.
Okay.
We brought him home. He was on oxygen for the first 6 months of his life.
Wow. God, that's scary, girl.
Yeah, it was not fun. Our home sounded like a hospital, and it was.
Well, and I would imagine you didn't get much sleep.
You what?
I would imagine, I mean, I'm just picturing myself, and I'm imagining you not being able to really sleep soundly, just waiting to hear that alarm.
Yeah, it was, it took a long time to get adjusted to that setting in our home. But it was so weird because when we brought him home from the hospital, he really didn't have any more episodes. It was like the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
He was relaxed. And I don't know if it was just because he was like in a setting that he could also tell that mom and dad was more comfortable, but like we didn't have hardly any issues. I think we had maybe two episodes at home, and that was like the end of it. And now he's 2 years and 3 months and yeah. He sleeps through the night like it's no big thing.
Wow, so. that's a lot. Like that is a lot of things to go through. Really? Wow. Well, I'm glad you shared.
Thank you.
That, yeah. And like what you were saying before about like the only thing that you feel like you got trauma, that's a big thing. Like I think about this all the time. Like when I sit and think about moms not getting their skin to skin due to hospital things, you know, like some of you guys have heard my story when I worked in Hollywood, Florida. So a lot of times when you deliver, you have a labor nurse and then another labor nurse will come in and be the baby nurse. And I'm doing in quotes, you know, like we'll kind of do the baby, get done and go. Like, because by law, like by our standards, you have to have two nurses at bedside at delivery. There has to be someone who is solely for the baby and someone solely for mom. And so in some hospitals, they have a nursery team that comes to the delivery. Well, when you have a nursery team who comes, they want to go back to the nursery. So they want to get their stuff done, right? They're responsible for doing the assessment, putting in the baby orders, doing the baby meds, doing all those things. Well, I butt heads with these nursery nurses all the time because they were always trying to take my baby for the wait because they couldn't put the orders in until they had an accurate weight because you can't really do a medication order without a weight for a patient. And I can't tell you how many times I had to say, well, it's not about you now, is it? Because they would, and if I left the room, I would come in or sometimes I would hear because we had like a little supply room in between the labor rooms so I could hear them. And I would hear them saying to my mamas, it's just going to be a second. So, and then I can tell you what the weight is, trying to make it like, you're going to want to know, you know? And if a first time mom, of course we want to know, like, that's one of the big things people ask you, like you're getting texts like, oh my God, the baby's here. How much does the baby weigh? Like what, you know, like, so like even changing other people in our lives to realize like, I'm not going to know the weight right away. Don't ask me. But I can't tell you how many times the nurses would be like, well, I need to get my assessment and get my orders in. And I would go, well, it's not about you, is it? And I would just smile and be super friendly. But I know they hated me. But I came from the West Coast, really. Even though I live in the East Coast, I've done most of my career in the West Coast. And they've been way ahead of us for so long on the West Coast. The Midwest is a little better than the East Coast, but the East Coast is just backwards. And I don't know if some of you guys heard me say when I first moved from Florida to Tennessee, the hospital I was working at, amazing hospital, they were still taking the baby after the first hour, they'd come take the baby for a couple hours to the nursery. This was in 2018 and 2019. I was like, I felt like I had gone into a time warp. I couldn't believe it. Like I really could not believe it because I hadn't seen that in so long, yeah, you know?
Favoring too about sending him to the nursery. I remember my husband and I being so tired and like we just needed like an hour to ourselves like to nap, but I hated sending him to the nursery
No, but I think that's different, and that's a-okay. I am totally a fan of you guys when you're in the hospital. If you are exhausted, like literally exhausted, and you have this new baby, your body is newly, you know, I'm saying like beat up.
Yeah.
And you have that option. There is nothing wrong with you choosing to do that if it's an option.
Yeah.
But immediately, so that's where my whole point was going. Sometimes I lay in bed and I think, how in the world is it even acceptable in any sense at all that a woman carries a baby for 40 weeks, right? Hmm. And then we think it's okay to separate them immediately?
Yeah.
I mean, you really think about it, like, how is that okay? Like, can you imagine trying to take a bear cub from a bear? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and that's us. Like, it's so, like everything, all science, all evidence points that it's what you both need is not no separation, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's mind-boggling to me because I feel like a lot of what I fight for and what I teach you guys is such common sense stuff that if the professionals would just step back and like stop messing with things, we would all be better off.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But it's a battle. Such a battle. Anyway, we just go off on tangents around here. Let me hop on to someone else. Hi, Rebecca. How are you?
Hey, Trish. Hey, everyone. I'm good.
You guys need, let me see. So if you guys have not realized, and Kayla is breaking all the rules, and she's an old timer around here, so she knows what she's supposed to be doing. But what I like for you guys to do is edit your name so I know how far along you are. And it's a little complicated if you're on your phone. You click participants, then find your name, then click rename. If you're on a desktop, you kind of hover over your picture and it'll show mute and three little dots. Click the three little dots and then click rename. That way I know. And if you haven't shared your stories before, we love to hear them.
So I've shared my story before, but I actually just delivered on Thursday. So
I saw something on your chest a little bit ago.
Yeah. So for everyone on here, I was able to get my successful VBAC. I started 2 weeks ago. So not last Thursday, the 15th, but the Thursday prior, I went in for my 38 week check. And all that week, I was feeling just super nauseous. I was even like going to the toilet, feeling like terrible all week and just feeling like something was off. And because I've had a big baby with my first, I opted to do a cervical check just because I wanted to see what my body was doing, where I'm at, how hard I needed to push, or what other things I wanted to do to try and induce labor before my 40 weeks. And at that appointment, the midwife happily told me that I was already 4 centimeters dilated and 70% effaced. So it was like, she was happy. I was surprised and happy. Like, I don't know how you can say that you're happy from a cervical exam, but I seriously was. I think it was that weekend I started doing like the mile circuit more regularly. And I started really upping like my curb walking and squatting and doing all the yoga ball moves. And on Monday, again, I started to feel like super nauseous. I was getting sick all day, like wanted to vomit. I didn't vomit, but so then I went in for my
exam. You tried the midwife through, right? Didn't you try it and couldn't do it?
So I went in on Tuesday, and I was like, okay, well, I want to do another check. Like over the weekend, I was doing all these other things. Like we had sex a couple times. Like we were trying everything like at home, surely, like maybe I'm still moving along. And the midwife checked me again on Tuesday and said that I was 4, but could easily be stretched to a 6 because it was so soft. But she said, basically, it counts as whatever your like starting point is, not how you can stretch it. So I was 4 and 70 at that point. And so they recommended that we try the midwife brew. We tried the midwife's brew on Wednesday morning on an empty stomach. And I'm not going to lie, that was tough. That was really tough.
Room temp. It's so bad room temp. Ugh.
I did room temp. I got 80% of the way like finished, which I was super proud of myself for even doing that. And it definitely worked. Like I was on the toilet for like 3 hours, just nonstop. And then I felt super nauseous and I was like, I just have to lay down. And I took a nap for about an hour. I woke up with contractions and I got sick. Like I vomited out all the rest of the midwife's brew and I had contractions all day Wednesday. And they got to about, I would say between 5 and 7 minutes apart, but they never got intense. Like they never increased or they never got closer together. And eventually they phased out. So then I'm like feeling super defeated. Like I did, you know, on Tuesday, I did the membrane sweep, which I think I skipped over that part, but Tuesday I did a membrane sweep to move things along. Wednesday I did the midwife's brew. Here I am on Thursday morning feeling like crap. Like I've done everything possible and this baby is just not coming. Like I was ready to give up. I was like, okay, whatever. I'm going to do a shopping day. I went out, I ran errands, I did some shopping, and like mid errands, I started getting contractions again, but it was like 20 minutes apart. Like, okay, no big deal. So then I'm going through the rest of my day doing regular things and like, I'm not really paying attention. I'm still moving around, getting things ready in the house. And after lunch, I'm like, man, these are getting closer together. So then I started like timing them and they're like 4 to 5 minutes apart. And I'm like, well, that is, you know, like that's close together. But my midwife said, don't come in unless your water breaks or, you know, they're getting really intense. And at about 5 o'clock, sure enough, right at rush hour, I started feeling more intense contractions. And I turned to my husband, I said, I think we have to go now. So we got all our stuff. We
suspect that your water broke.
My water did not break.
I feel like I remember you saying something like every time you were contracting, you felt like you were peeing. Cause I think I read that late at night and I was like, did her water break?
Nope. My water didn't break until like very far along. So, I think as I was contracting, it was just like making me want to use the bathroom. Like I was literally just going to the toilet all day Thursday afternoon. So we got to the hospital. I walked into ER, like getting to the hospital in rush hour. It took us longer. So they really were getting really intense. So I knew that like my body was really in active labor, but I wanted to walk into the ER. They wanted to put me in a wheelchair and I said, nope, I'm going to walk.
I love L&D. It. Yep.
I walked it. All the way to L&D by myself. And the nurse at the triage station looked at me and she's like, well, how far apart are you? Like, kind of doubting. And I was like, no, they're getting intense. Like they're, you know, about 4 minutes apart now. And she got me into triage. The midwife was already there because we had called them on the way. And so she was still taking my vitals or entering my vitals when the midwife asked to do a cervical check. And I said, yeah, I'd like to know where I am. It's been a while. We've been through a lot. And she checks me and I'm 8 centimeters long. And the nurse was like, what? You're 8 centimeters long and you did that all by yourself at home? And I said,
I love yes. it.
She was just in shock. But so we got in, I was 8 centimeters. I wanted to do an unmedicated birth. My doula was there with me and we just started doing different positions. So I started using some of the positions that you taught me in purposeful positioning. And, we were, you know, doing squats or doing like, there was a step stool and squat bar that I was using. And, we were in the, the shower for a while with a yoga ball, and I was on the toilet for a little bit. I was using the squat bar. So like just kind of moving around the room in all different places. And eventually, like, I made it through transition. I was fully effaced and ready to start pushing. My water still did not break. And the midwife said, well, let me just, you know, before we start pushing, why don't we just check? And I said, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And she checked and she's like, you know what, Rebecca, I think the baby is actually in a different position. Like she's at a zero station, but she feels like she's malpositioned or she might be trying to go OP. Before we start pushing, I really think that we need to do some other kinds of movements to get her in a better position. So then they brought in another nurse who was certified in spinning babies. And so she was recommending the sideline release and the flying cowgirl. And obviously I know what those things are from your class. So for what felt like forever, we were kind of just rotating through these different positions during like the really intense contractions because my body wanted to push. And eventually she turned and then she still wasn't coming down into my pelvis, into the like positive stations. And so my husband kept asking, well, what station is she? What station is she? Should we start pushing? Is it in the positives yet? And the midwife said, well, your water is just really, it's still there. It's really intact. And she's like, I honestly feel if we break your water, she's going to be able to pull down a little bit further into your pelvis. And so we broke my water, and sure enough, like 20 minutes later, after, you know, breathing through contractions, she was in plus two. So then we started pushing. And so I was doing, you know, different pushing positions, and within 20 minutes of pushing, she was here.
I love it. What do you feel like was the position you liked the most when you were pushing? Like
when which one felt the most? I really liked the sideline pushing position, as well as I was doing the like reverse squat on the bed, because I could like lean over to the bed and like just really relax in between contractions, which I needed. So I alternated between sideline on different sides, the squatting on the back of the bed. And then I ended up delivering on my back, which was surprising to me. I thought I was going to want to do sideline, but it was really helpful. They had different handles. Like they put up these different handles that I could use to like almost do the crunches. And I think that ultimately just helped me get her through the ring of fire, if you will.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know if you've heard my story, but I've told everybody, this is why in my birth plan consults, I do not want to push on my back unless I want to, because every single one of my kids, I pushed in all of these different positions, minus my first, because they put me in lithotomy and I didn't know. But I pushed in all these weird positions, but some reason at the very end, I'd always fall back into a wonky back position right before they came out. But I think once they're at a certain spot, when they're coming out, the work is done pretty much. You know what I mean? Like you've already moved them into the right. And it's kind of like, I think it's just instinctual to get to your back where you can hold your baby. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just think it might be semi-instinctual to do that. You know, I think now if you're squatting next to a bed or something, I think that squatting is one of the only exceptions I see to that rule. A lot of women who are squatting don't always fall back into a back position. Because I think they feel more secure. I think there's something primal in us that needs to be in a secure position, because at one day in age, we actually reached down and got our baby. You know what I mean? So I really think it's a primal thing. I really think there's something primal in our brain that takes over, you know, for a left or, you know.
Definitely. Yeah. Cause I started from the squatting position, went to sidelining on different, alternating different sidelining, and then, fell to my back. And then they put up those kind of like, this almost looks like handlebars, but it like reminded me of like your tug of war kind of thing. Although I had two different handlebars on either side for that stomach crunch.
Yeah. I pull those up sometimes for my patients, even if they're, squatting, they're nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we're so proud of you.
I'm so happy. Like it just like everyone was cheering me on. I had so many nurses and people coming up and just saying like how impressed and empowered they were to like be a part of like my birthing team. And like people were asking me if I took courses and what I did to prepare. Like they felt like it was just such an incredible moment. And I felt so incredible, one, because I accomplished my goal, but two, because I really felt like I was really supported by the team. Yeah. And Mary, I know you said you're in the Columbia area. I delivered at Prisma Parkridge in Irmo, and it was just an unbelievable experience. I delivered at Lexington Medical, and it was complete night and day. Like I switched providers when I was 33 weeks along from Lexington Medical over to the Irmo midwife group. And it just was the best decision I've ever made.
Oh, wow. Well, that's interesting. I'm delivering at, it's 5 Medical Parkway. So it's still a Prisma hospital, but.
Okay. Oh, is that Baptist?
What?
Is that Prisma Baptist?
I don't think so. We're still kind of learning like where everything is, to be honest. But I don't know. And I kind of thought about maybe switching, but I don't know. I feel like almost I'm too late in the game to switch.
Like, oh, no, you're not. Ever. I've had students switch right at the very end.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I said, you're not. I've had students that have come into the courses like at 38, 39 weeks and literally switch right at the end. And I can tell you, I have never had a student switch and regret it, ever. I've had a ton regretting that they didn't make the switch, but I've never had one regret it.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's something I have to think about. I mean, my provider hasn't shut me down as far as having a VBAC, which is also why I'm kind of like, debating like should I change, should I not change, like, but she hasn't officially told me like no, you're not going to be able to do that or whatever, you know what I mean?
So you saying she hasn't officially makes me feel like there are things that have been said that you're uncomfortable with.
I talked to her about having to be back on a couple different appointments. And like when I very first met her, I talked to her about having a VBAC. And I felt like she was open to it, but not 100% supportive. And then I started taking your VBAC lab class and I talked to her about it again, and she seemed more open the second time we had the conversation. Think that was because she could tell that I was educating myself more. So I don't know. I feel like I'll probably be okay with her, but at the same time, I don't know, just something tells me that maybe I should look into switching. I don't know. I don't know what I want to do.
I was interested in the area, the Irmo midwife group. They are pro VBAC. They all have this share like.
Oh, always when someone's saying something pivotal, every time, right, Sarah?
Yeah, Rebecca, when you were talking.
It froze. Ah, Rebecca, you froze. Let me check in with Jess real quick and then we'll go back to, oh, she's coming back in. Hold on, let's see what happened. We've got two of you, one frozen and do you see this?
What is going on? Sorry guys, I'm having technical difficulties tonight.
That's okay. I can, oh, there you go. Yeah. So you were saying something about the IRMO.
Oh, so the midwifery group, that was the one that I switched to after my provider was giving me some like red flags when I was asking questions about VBAC, and she seemed more tolerant, not really, you know, pro VBAC. And I signed up for just an initial kind of visit or consultation with the midwife group out of Prisma Park Ridge, and instantly just felt like they heard me, like they like validated, and they were like almost angry at my first birth experience and story. And we talked through what I wanted in my second kind of, I was calling it my birthing redo, and what my goals were. And they really were like asking me and like empowering me to continue like going down this path. And every step of the way for the last 4 to 5 weeks, and it's not that much time to be with a new provider, but every way I just felt like always empowered and supported, and they went above and beyond answering all my questions, and everyone in the group is just amazing there.
What I love about that, that I think is so powerful, is that when you have a group like that and you end up being in a situation where a repeat cesarean is being offered or suggested, there's just so much more confidence in saying, yeah, I think that a repeat cesarean is necessary in this case, because you trust them, because you know they wanted that VBAC for you as much as you want it. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you have a tolerant doctor, even if you kind of know, like, yeah, this was probably a smart reason for a repeat, there's still this little bit of nagging thought, like, what if, you know, and that what if can kill you.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's, if you feel like it's at all possible for you to, if you feel like your provider is at all tolerant and it is doable for you to switch to this group because you're near them and you know that they're going to 100% support you, and you have the bandwidth to do it. Cause I get it when you're just like, I mean, I'm at a point right now, like I can't handle anything else right now. And like some like seemingly easy decisions are more difficult because I'm just under a lot of stress. So I also get being like, you know what, like I know it probably be a good decision for me, but I don't know if I can handle it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Rebecca, what was the name? It's an IRMO, but what was the name of the
midwifery? So it's Prisma Midwifery of Park Ridge. So okay. Even if you go on Prisma Park Ridge, you can find the midwives under the like L&D section. But if you just Google midwifery IRMO or midwifery Prisma IRMO, I can't remember the exact name, you'll find it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I truly believe that making the switch was just the best decision for me. And they were so patient. And, you know, even when, you know, baby wasn't dropping down past, you know, zero station, and she was potentially, you know, malpositioned, and they were considering, you know, that she was going to be OP, and it was looking like, you know, gosh, we're going to be back in a C-section again. Like the midwives, my doula, the nurses, everyone was just like really so patient and giving me the time and helping me move into these like, absolutely ridiculous positions when you're contracting and helping me and coaching me along the way. And so it truly was just a great environment to, you know, bring my baby into. And I'm so happy I did, and it worked out well. So, I wish you all the best. At least give them a call and see what they can do.
Yeah, thank you. I will look in.
Well, let's, can you guys hear me? I don't know if I have my mute off. Yeah. Jess, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I feel like this pregnancy is just so different for me than my other two pregnancies have been. I've just been struggling with a lot of anxiety this time around and like just a lot of mood swings, which has been different for me. So it's just challenging, like staying home with two little kids and like their moods are all over the place. So it's challenging and I'm trying to potty train my 15 month old. So that's not fun. I forgot how not fun it is. But he's doing pretty good at it. So I can't complain.
I think we have, I'm looking right now because I feel like we have a potty training expert coming in sometime soon.
I saw that. I did RSVP to that because I was like, okay. I feel like this.
Okay. Oh, it's in February, darn it. I wish it were sooner, but man, we are strapped out for January. Shoot.
It's, I finished my taking all my glucose numbers on Sunday. So I just sent that in Sunday night after my last number. So I'm just waiting to hear back from the doctor's office on that. But I've kind of like come to the feeling of like, I probably am like borderline, like gestational diabetes. But what I found is like, depending on what I ate was where my numbers would go all wacky. So like something that was like real sugar heavy and carb heavy, then my numbers would be real high. And usually we eat pretty like healthy. Like we don't have a lot of carbs in the house and that because my husband's been dieting for a while. So I've been like cooking more to like what he's been eating and that. So the meals are a lot more healthy. So when we would have like really healthy meals, then my numbers would be within range. So
lesson learned.
So, well, I'm going to have to figure that out. But I'm just kind of worried about how this doctor's office is going to be, because my last two experiences with them, because it's a new doctor's office since I moved. And they kind of just rush you out the door. Like they don't really spend any time like giving you information. So like when I've asked questions, they really just kind of tiptoe around my question and move on to something else, which is just feels irritating. And I didn't realize I was having some mood swings lately. And I've just had a lot of like anger. And that, and so like I've not struggled with that, and it's just been really challenging to like deal with. And I was talking to my best friend this weekend, and she kind of said to me like, really sounds like you haven't like at all spent any time enjoying this pregnancy, which was kind of hard to hear, but also like a reality for me of like, I have. Like none of this has been enjoyable. Like my other two pregnancies were, and even like, I don't know, with my son, I had a miscarriage before I got pregnant with him. So like the first 12 weeks were real anxiety inducing of like just making sure that I was doing everything right. And like that we weren't going to lose the baby. Even though there's like nothing I could do to control that. This time around, it feels so much more than when I had like was pregnant with him. So that's just been like a big struggle lately for me.
Yeah. Well, I get that. And I think that sometimes that stuff can be magnified because you don't have the time for self-care and relaxation and like, you know, like I can remember being really, really sick with morning sickness with one of them. It had to have been one of the older boys because I had the other boys home. And I can just remember sitting on the bathroom floor crying so hard because I didn't even have time to be sick. Like there was no time for sick.
Yeah.
Because a toddler has to be cared for. Like, they don't know, you know? And I can just remember crying. Just so, and it was lonely.
Yeah. And my two kids have been sick. Like, they've been battling like some virus that's like floating around. My daughter like always has the worst reactions to them. So she, like, we ended up having to rush her to the doctor's office because she broke out in a huge rash all over her body and like had a terrible reaction to the virus. Like, it wasn't anything she ate or anything we did. Like, she just, her body just broke out and like she like started swelling and we were like, what? I'm like, what is this? So that was like scary and difficult. And she, I don't know why it was like extra scary this time, but like anytime she gets something, she usually breaks out in a rash. Like, that's just how her body acts. So, you know, we had to put her on prednisone for a week, which ends up being like 2 weeks of hell because she just like,
oh, her, it's awful, I know. Yep.
So, like, been difficult, and now she's not sleeping through the night. And I mean, she's four. So I'm like, why? Like, your brother's sleeping through the night. Why can't you? So she's up like 4 and 5 times in the middle of the night, just wanting to be put back to bed. So trying to like work on that and figure out what's going on.
I didn't bribery on that one. Like, I went through the same thing with Grayson, and we ended up, this is terrible, but he was like 5. We ended up buying him a drone. I was so desperate and he wanted one so bad. And we put it on top of the refrigerator and he had to not, he was allowed one get up per night for 2 nights, and then he had to have no get up. We called them get ups, no get ups for 3 nights in a row. And it took us a couple weeks to get there. But once we got to a point where he talked himself out of getting up and coped with laying there, and it took us probably 10 days. And I think he was gradually, like, maybe the first couple nights he only got up 3 times instead of 5 times. And so those other couple times he was still waking up, but he was comforting himself. Mm. The other thing we did was we went to Build-A-Bear because he was, okay, so confession time for y'all. I got separated, and for that year, so some of you guys have heard my whirlwind romance with Steve Ware, but I was separated for a year, and Grayson slept with me that whole year. And so when Steve and I got married, Grayson had been the king of the bed, you know, for all that time. Well, here I am a newlywed, and of course I, you know, neither of us want the baby, the kid in the bed. So we went through hell those first couple of weeks. So one of the other things I did is we went to Build-A-Bear. I let him pick out one he really wanted. We let him dress him. I mean, we dropped some dollar bills on this kid sleep habits. And then I recorded me comforting him and talking him to him. And we literally, this, it's Combo Panda is what it is. And he has slept with it ever since. And we left it at Universal at the hotel last week when we went to Universal for his birthday, but they are mailing him back. But we thought we lost him on vacation. And I felt like I was having a mental breakdown because this bear was like this milestone bear, but that, between the two of those things, that is what worked for us. But I do have a very good friend. She's in a business group for other like course creators, teachers. And I can see she has a sleep course for that age range.
Okay.
And it's called Awesome Little Sleepers. Her course is kind of pricey. But if you watch her masterclass on her website, you get, you can get the course for like 200 off. But if you give me, send me a DM in Circle and I'll message her and ask her if she has any kind of discount link or something I can use.
Okay.
But she's really popular and a lot of her clients are like famous people.
Okay. Yeah, so, it's been challenging. We finally got my son to sleep through the night when we moved into the house. And long story, but we weren't in the most ideal situation for several months because we moved from New Hampshire to Pennsylvania because my husband transferred jobs. And so we didn't have anywhere to stay. So we were living in my brother's basement, which was just one big room that we had set up, but we were all sleeping in one room together. So like my son wasn't sleeping well. He never slept well. He was like up every 45 minutes every night since he had been born. So nobody slept well. My daughter like actually was sleeping well then. And then as soon as we moved into our new house and she got her own room, then she stopped sleeping through the night and my son started sleeping through the night. So
oh my God.
And then I got pregnant and I was like, great, now I'm never gonna sleep because I don't sleep when I'm pregnant well. So she's just, I keep talking to her like about it and we got her night lights and then we got her more night lights. And now I think her room's too bright.
That's what I thought with Grayson. We went too bright as well. I don't think he was getting into a deep sleep pattern because of it.
Yeah. That's what I'm afraid of because now like my mom bought her these like butterfly lights that hang around her room and they just stay on all the time, but they're like an LED light. So I don't think that they're like a soft enough light. So I think too bright for her room. So tonight we put them on a timer and once she falls asleep, they should turn off. And kind of, she's terrified of that, but she has two other lights in her room, like little night lights.
That might be a little much.
I'm like, you'll be fine. If your room's not going to be pitch black, but she had a meltdown tonight before we put her to bed. And I was like, it'll be okay. We're still right next door.
I would try. I mean, I'm coming from like left field because I didn't get any kind of formal training on this, but that's what worked for us with Grayson. But I just sent a text to Jessica, the owner of Awesome Little Sleepers, and asked her if she has any kind of like that, you know, like discounts or anything that I can share with you guys. I need to have her come in and do a workshop because there's a lot of my mamas who have kids and even for some of the moms like entering into that, because a lot of people teach about newborn, but not a lot of people realize that you can have issues arise later. And it is maddening because you go from having this really good sleeper to almost like a newborn behavior. And you're like, what the heck? Like what just happened? And I think sometimes in my own, like in my thought, like it, you know, for Grayson, it was very obvious. There was a huge amount of change in his life. Plus he had always slept with me. And I'll be real, just to be honest, I had to mourn it too, because he had slept with me for so long, you know? But I think it was emotional for him as well. So there might be some, like, you've already listed some major life changes she's going through, you know, so it could be related to that as well. And I'm a huge fan of play therapy. So one of the things that Grayson's play therapist does is she has like a sand bucket and little people and little things, and she'll have him act things out. So sometimes you can, like when he kept burying me in the sand, I realized he was mad at me about something, you know, like I was always under the sand. So, you know, like just kind of watching what might be going on with her and creating like a really stellar nighttime routine.
Yeah. Well, we have a nighttime routine that's never changed. Like it's always been. And that's one of the things that like she kind of craves is just a lot of routine. So her nighttime routine has always been exactly the same, even after having our son and that we just introduced him into it.
Okay.
So she's been doing pretty well with that and the falling asleep. Like she does really well with that. It's just like the middle of the night. Just wanting to get up constantly. And really I'm very anti sleep in like having my kids sleep in my bed with me. Just because I did like in-home therapy for years, before getting into emergency room therapy, like evaluations. And so I've seen like the horror side of it.
Yeah.
And so I like was not okay with my kids sleeping in bed with me. And my husband's like, well, it's not that big of a deal. Like when he was little, he slept in bed with his mom. So yeah. He really seen the impact of it. So like, if she doesn't come to my side of the bed and she goes, they'll like let her for a little while. And yeah. I think that's not helping because then she comes over and wants to get in bed. And I have like a strict rule of like, she can come in the bed after like 6 o'clock in the morning. Then she can come in and be in bed for like till her brother wakes up and then we get up. And she does that and is okay with that. But lately, since she's been.
You guys have to be on the same page.
Yeah. So because kind of.
They are little terrorists when it comes to conquering and dividing.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll let you know if, will you send me a DM so I remember to send it because I've got a lot going on and y'all know how that works. But yeah, send me a DM and I reached out to Jessica. I'm having a feeling I may not hear from her until tomorrow. I don't think she's in the same time zone, but I don't remember. But anyway, all right, ladies, it was nice to see you. I can't remember what's happening. Let me see if I know there's a couple workshops coming up here soon. Taylor's doing an infant massage class and then the avoiding burnout and early parenthood. And then I'm doing, just so you guys know, we are doing a couple paid like webinars here soon, including one about induction, but you'll always find the free link inside of Circle. So don't, if you see me announce something on social media, always check in Circle first, because usually those are going to be free to you guys. So we put the links in there. I haven't linked to the actual class yet because I've got to figure out how to do that where you guys don't have to pay, but we'll have it in there before the class happens. We're going to do it twice, I think. I just get so many questions about inductions. So I'm going to do it and then it'll be kind of an ongoing that will house in the community, but it'll be like a paid class for people outside of the membership. And if you guys have any other ideas of like classes you want to see us teaching or like something you'd love us to dive deeper into, always let me know. Like I totally will add, like I said, January is a little crazy. And I think we're booking into March now. Really, I don't know if you guys have looked at it, but I'm super excited. So Stacy does most of the outreach to talk to different experts. We have something called the Mama Jamma Dance. Did you guys see this? I don't know what it is, but I'm very interested to find out what that is. But that should be a fun surprise workshop. All right, ladies, I will see you guys next week. Bye.